That long, long predates social media, right? It is simply human nature to want to affiliate with a belief or a set of beliefs and to surround yourself with others who share in that same set of beliefs.
Welcome to the Mittland Money Mindset. This is a podcast that's all about getting your mind right when it comes to all things money. In every episode, we go deep with engaging guests who provide tangible takeaways and a whole lot of joy along the way. I hope you enjoy these conversations as much as I enjoyed having them. Let's dive into today's show. I'm Larry Sprung, your host for the Mittland Money Mindset and founder and wealth advisor of Mittland Financial. Today's guest is Paula Pant, host of the Afford Anything podcast. Paula is the host of the Afford Anything podcast, an award-winning show with more than 28 million downloads. It was named by the New York Times as one of seven podcasts your wallet will love. She is also the founder of Afford Anything, a personal finance brand with more than 75,000 newsletter subscribers. Paula is frequently featured in the financial media, including Money Magazine, The Washington Post, Oprah.com, CNBC, Fortune, Cosmopolitan, The New York Times, and many, many more. Paula has spoken at the Talks at Google series and guest lectured at Georgetown University. She is a Knight Badgett Business and Economics Journalism Fellow at Columbia University. Listen in for some great takeaways about hosting one of the top podcasts in the world and how money is a tool that, when used properly, we can enjoy our lives today while still planning for our futures. Well, hello, everybody. I have the absolute pleasure today of being with Paula Pant, the host of the Afford Anything podcast. I am so excited for this conversation and thank you so much for joining us today, Paula. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Oh, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm a big fan of the entrepreneurial journey and understanding kind of what brought people to where they are. So we're going to talk a lot about the Afford Anything podcast for sure. But can you give our listeners, just so they have an understanding of who you are, kind of where you came from, what was the path to getting there?
We'll start with when I graduated from college, I had no idea that entrepreneurship was feasible. The notion that you could do anything else other than simply send out your resume and get a job, that was outside of my consciousness. So straight out of college, I did what most people are expected to do, is I got a job. I was a newspaper reporter for a small newspaper based in Colorado. And while I was there, I started going to these journalism conferences. And journalism conferences are broken out into these different tracks. You've got print, you've got radio, you've got television, and then there was this one track called freelance. And I had never heard of that before. And so I started kind of dipping into some of those sessions just to see what this is all about. And that was when I learned at a conceptual level that it was possible to be self-employed. Now, at this point, I did not yet understand the difference between being self-employed versus being an entrepreneur. That added layer of nuance came later.
Baby steps.
But exactly, exactly. But that was my introduction to learning that you could earn money outside of traditional W-2 employment. So for 3 years while I was at that newspaper, I worked at that newspaper as my full-time W-2 day job. And during the evenings and weekends, I wrote freelance articles. And it quickly became clear that my compensation as a freelance writer was significantly higher on an hourly basis than what I was making at my full-time job at the newspaper. So I ultimately did the thing that nobody ever does, which is I left the newspaper. I voluntarily quit a journalism job. No one ever does that, especially in print newspapers.
Right.
I left that job and became initially a full-time freelance writer. And then I started to realize it's far better, rather than writing for other people's platforms, it's far better to own the underlying platform. So I started building out my own underlying platform, which is Afford Anything, which started off as a blog and a newsletter, and then later became a podcast. and a series of online courses, and now is an entire multimedia, multi-channel brand.
Amazing. Amazing. So it's funny that you had that kind of iteration, no idea about entrepreneurial journey, kind of moving into being self-employed and then really creating this media empire for yourself and your followers, which is great. At what point and where did the idea around the Afford Anything podcast come from?
Well, so the podcast started 5 years after I started the brand. I started the brand initially as a blog and a newsletter. And the notion of Afford Anything is that you can afford anything, but not everything. Every choice that you make is a trade-off against something else. And that notion challenges all of us to be incredibly thoughtful about the trade-offs that we accept, the priorities that we hold, what matters most. It's easy to say that you value family and adventure and generosity and X and Y and Z and health, right? But when there are actual budgetary trade-offs between the amount of money that you're spending on wellness treatments versus overseas travel versus unpaid time off that you might choose to take from your company, right? When there are actual budgetary changes, how do you become incredibly crystal clear about your values? And then based on that root in values, how do you become incredibly clear about the decisions, the spending decisions that you are going to make accordingly? And this applies not just to money, but to any limited resource. So it's not just our money, it's our time, it's our energy, it's our attention, it's any limited resource that we need to manage. So that's the concept of Afford Anything. And you asked how that came about. It actually started, so I mentioned that I quit that newspaper job. When I quit that job, there was a 2 year, actually 27 months, so 2 years and 3 months gap between when I quit that job and when I started devoting myself to full-time freelancing, which eventually became full-time running a content agency. But that 27-month gap, I just went and traveled. I was like, look, I just quit my job. I had $25,000 in savings. And I was like, I can make, if I go to countries where the dollar exchange rate really works in my favor, if I go hang out in Cambodia, in Laos, in Vietnam, in places where the US dollar goes a lot further, I can stretch that $25,000. This was 2009, 2010. Right. So adjust for inflation, as you will. But I lived on that for 2 years and 3 months and then traveled mostly in Southeast Asia with a little bit of North Africa and 10 months living out of a car in Australia, camping every night, sleeping in a tent every night in Australia. So many of my friends said, I would love to do something like that, but I can't afford it. That was the number one thing that I heard. I would love to travel. I would love to go to Australia. I'd love to go to New Zealand or Malaysia or Singapore, but I can't afford it. And yet these were the same friends who lived in homes that had stainless steel appliances, right? I'd never had a stainless steel appliance in my life. They thought nothing about spending $14 on a glass of wine or a martini, right? I, at that point in my life, had never spent even half of that on a single drink. These are friends who they just spending decision after spending decision. They would go to concerts and they would go to this and that and the other, but then they would say that they couldn't afford to travel, right? And I don't begrudge anyone. If you sit down and very consciously make the decision that enjoying your time with your friends here at home, and you define enjoyment as the $14 martini and the $100 concert ticket, right? If you make a conscious decision that that is more important to you than going backpacking across Australia for a year, that's great. You've thought it through. You've come to a conscious choice. And now your statement is not going to be, I'd love to do that, but I can't afford it. Your statement is, I thought about doing that and I decided it was not a priority. Right. And that's a very different statement.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And I'm in full alignment there. We talk a lot about joy on this show and enjoyment and where you get that. Right. And when we're speaking and working with families, there are so many people in our profession that it's all about the money and putting this money away for retirement for this time frame, 30, 40, 50 years down the road, that many people may not even make it to. Right. So there's got to be a conscious decision to say, okay, what makes sense for me to do today to get joy out of my life? What am I willing to sacrifice for down the road, 30, 40, 50, 60 years, so I can get some enjoyment today? And as long as you kind of budget for it and plan for it, and it fits into your overall goals and objectives, then why not get the joy, right? But like you said, we all have priorities. It's not that you can't necessarily afford it. It's that you probably can. You've just chosen to direct those resources in another direction. And that's fine, right? Because if that's bringing you joy, then that's the right decision for you. And that's what it's really all about.
Exactly.
So your podcast, Afford Anything, has over 20 million downloads. What do you attribute
almost the podcast? 30 million, actually, at this point.
30 million. I think the last I saw was like 29 million. So yeah, I'm trying not to pin it down to the exact number. But so, I mean, what do you attribute that success to? Because that's hugely successful in terms of number of downloads in the podcast space.
Oh, thank you. I think there's a confluence of a few factors. Number one, as I said, I was blogging and releasing a newsletter, a multi-time per week newsletter, for 5 years before I launched the podcast. So at the time that I launched the podcast, Afford Anything already had a community. Episode one, we already had 5,000, 6,000 downloads right out of the gate, right at episode one. And that's because I'd spent the previous 5 years building the Afford Anything community. I started the podcast largely because my community was asking me to start a podcast. I would get DMs and emails and messages from my fans, from people in this community saying, when are you going to start a podcast? So I think that had a lot to do with it, at least initially. In the world of personal finance, there are many platforms out there that can be prescriptive, overly prescriptive, and that prescription is often one size fits all. Afford Anything, we don't do that. We don't tell you what to do. We guide you through a framework of how to think through decision making. So I like to say that we're not really a financial podcast. We are a show about how to be a more clear thinker and a better decision maker disguised as a money show.
Interesting. So that's also led to a tremendous amount of success in your view.
People are fundamentally very intelligent. And if you sit there, not you, but if one sits there and says, here's your step-by-step formula, do exactly X, exactly Y, exactly Z, there's a lot lacking in that. There is a certain appeal to like, okay, I'm busy, just tell me what to do. That does hold a certain appeal, but only for 5 minutes. It doesn't nurture a long-term relationship with an audience, especially an intellectually curious audience. I think that comes from not telling people what to do, not telling people what to think, but rather showing them how to think. Again, mm-hmm. not what to think, but how to think. That comes from noting cognitive biases and heuristics and mental models and drawing interdisciplinary insights from adjacent fields so that we can develop a more comprehensive understanding of our minds, because money is fundamentally emotional and behavioral. And when we have a better understanding of our inner psychology, what makes us tick, what makes us afraid, that's how we understand the way that money impacts us at an emotional level, at a core, deep level. And that connects with people far more so than any prescriptive advice ever could.
I agree. And thank you for sharing that great perspective. I appreciate that. And I know our listeners will too. I want to share something that I recently read that you wrote, the following. Money is not the root of all evil. Plenty of people are evil and broke. Money would let them be evil at scale. Plenty of people are good and broke. Money would let them be good at scale. Money is an amplifier. How do you think that we can help? Because I agree with that, right? How do you think we can help people understand that money is a tool, right? Money's not something that's going to be the end all be all. It's really the tool of what that money represents. How do we get people to understand that and understand that representation?
Right. Unfortunately, a lot of us have been socialized since early childhood to believe very negative views about money. So I talked earlier about cognitive biases. Now, there's a distinction here. A cognitive bias is something that is innate in the way that the human mind works. So for example, recency bias is our tendency to overweight something that happened recently. If I was in a car accident last week, I'm going to be hypervigilant about car accidents because of the fact that I was in one so recently, right? Versus if I was in a car accident 15 years ago, I might not be quite as vigilant because that recency is no longer there, right? Recency bias closely accompanies salience bias, which is how salient something is in your mind. You tend to overweight the probability of that happening. Right? It's also known as the availability heuristic. It's a shortcut. It's a mental model. What is most available to come to mind, right? So when we talk about, that's one set of examples, those are cognitive biases, right? And those cognitive biases are innate to every human. So that's nature. But if we set that aside and then we focus on nurture, right? The nurture element is what we were taught about money as children. And unfortunately, there are so many negative messages that we learn. We hear money is the root of all evil, which, by the way, is a misquote of the Bible verse. The actual Bible verse is the love of money is the root of all evil, meaning greed, right? But that's not what we grow up hearing. We grow up hearing the misquote that money is the root of all evil. We grow up seeing cartoon characters like Montgomery Burns from The Simpsons or Scrooge McDuck, right? Mm-hmm. These are literally, they're cartoon villains. And what makes them a villain? They're rich, right? So we learn that to be rich is necessarily to be evil, to be greedy, to be bad. And when we deeply internalize those messages, we often think, well, I don't want to be a bad person. I don't want to be evil. I don't want to be greedy. So I should stay small. I should stay poor or middle class. I should not want too much. I should not want to be wealthy, because if I'm wealthy, then I'm Montgomery Burns from The Simpsons. Who wants to be that character, right? I'm Benny from the musical Rent, right? Nobody wants to be that character.
I want to take a quick break from the show to talk to you about our latest best-selling book, Financial Planning Made Personal. It breaks down complex financial concepts into simple, easy-to-follow steps that anyone can understand. Everyone has a unique financial journey, and this book can help yours. Do you have your copy yet? If not, please go to financialplanningmadepersonal.com and order one today. And I have one more question for you. What did you do today that brought you joy?
I appreciate that very much. And I agree. I think we have a lot of work to do, and we have to unlearn some of those things and kind of reprogram our thought processes around money and hopefully change that is a tool again. With shows like yours and us kind of having those conversations, the more we do that, the better off we're all going to be, for sure. So I got to bring up this because you mentioned the word prescriptive advice. And recently you had a great response to a Dave Ramsey video, and I'd like to explore that. And you shared how, whether right or wrong, whether what he was saying was right or wrong, there were certainly people that came out in support of him with regard to this specific topic, and there were people that came out against him for sure. But regardless of that, you talked about the fact that Dave pulls in viewers with his confidence and storytelling. So how can those working to expand their reach, folks like you and I and other listeners that were looking to expand our reach for good, how can we do that through improving our storytelling? Obviously, you've done a great job of it, almost 30 million downloads, et cetera. So there are people listening to that and you're keeping them engaged. How can we double down and continue to do that with more of us?
Well, a few things. Number one, what Dave has done very well is he has definite opinions. We all know that Dave Ramsey hates debt, right? And we may agree, we may disagree, we may have new, but like, he has a very definite opinion. Debt bad. We all know that Robert Kiyosaki loves investing, right? He has a very definite opinion. So we've got these people in the space who have very definite opinions. Now, what about those of us, somebody like me, like my stance is, hey, think clearly, be nuanced, right? Learn your cognitive biases. I mean, it's not as strong. It's not as simple as a debt bad talking point. How do we convey that? I've wondered this often myself. And in order to answer that, I look at the people within the personal finance space who they're incredibly thoughtful and nuanced and intellectually rigorous. People like Morgan Housel. People, if you look at an adjacent vertical, people like Shane Parrish from the Farnham Street blog and the Knowledge Project podcast. What flagpole have they like planted in the sand? They have planted the flagpole of be thoughtful, be nuanced, be intellectually rigorous. Like you can have a strong opinion, and that strong opinion is to not be dogmatic, right? You can have a strong
black and white.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You can have a strong opinion, and that opinion is be intellectually rigorous. So whatever that opinion is, that is what you stand for. And over time, people come to associate you with that flagpole that you've planted, with the message for which you stand.
Yeah.
People know you for your conviction. So what is your central conviction? And even if that conviction is, my conviction is that we should not hew too closely to our convictions, that we must constantly question. Hey, great. Then that is your conviction.
Right. Do you think some of this has to do with like the social media landscape and it being somewhat of an attention grabbing economy where we're trying to grab people's attention? Like, do you think that people are just putting it out there as a almost like a clickbait situation? Or do you really think that some of these folks, like you mentioned earlier, they really are that convicted and they really believe what they're saying wholeheartedly? Or do you think some of it's this attention kind of grabbing comments or statements, if you will?
The human tendency to want to follow people who have strong ideas, that is well documented through all of human history. When we look at political ideologies around the world, when we look at groups that have formed based around a given idea or a given set of beliefs or a given set of principles or a given common cause and common identity, right? That long, long predates social media, right? It is simply human nature to want to affiliate with an idea, with a belief or a set of beliefs, and to surround yourself with others who share in that same set of beliefs, right? Have your belief, have your worldview, and then have your community of people who share that worldview. That is like at our very core level, how humans have formed groups throughout all of human history. Social media is nothing more than simply a vehicle, a communication platform. It doesn't fundamentally change the element of human nature. And it doesn't matter what the belief was. Some people are vegetarian. Some people are keto. Some people are paleo. Some people are whole 30, right? Like everyone's got their various food-related ideology. If you're vegetarian, you want to be in a community with other vegetarians and you want to swap vegetarian recipes. And likewise, if you're paleo, you want exactly the same thing, but with a paleo community.
Gotcha. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. So let's talk about your convictions a little bit for a minute, right? How do you break somewhat with conventional wisdom with regard to the concept of financial independence? Because I believe in some ways you kind of break away from that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, the acronym that's commonly used, FIRE, stands for Financial Independence, Retire Early. Now, financial independence, as I define it, is the point at which your passive or residual income, which is often created through investments, is enough. That leads to, of course, the obvious follow-up question of how do you define enough? And that's a secondary line of inquiry that we can go down. But if we define financial independence as the point at which your passive or residual income, and I should say your potential, they don't have to be realized gains, right? Mm-hmm. They can be unrealized gains,
right?
So the point at which your potential passive income, even if they are unrealized gains, is enough. That's financial independence. And once you reach that, there's a huge level of psychological freedom. You know that you can make decisions without money overshadowing every decision that you make. And you know that if, like, heaven forbid, there's some type of emergency, and for 6 months or for a year or for 2 years even, you need to or you want to not have any income production because you have to take care of some type of a family emergency, you want to know that you can do that and still keep the lights on and keep food in the fridge, right? And that's what financial independence enables. Now, the retire early portion of it, I think that that should be forever eradicated from its association with financial independence, because retiring early is one of a multitude of possible options that could come after financial independence. So you could, upon financial independence, choose to retire early if you wanted to, or you could choose to become a circus clown if you wanted to, or you could choose to learn 13 languages if you wanted to, or you could choose to, you know, when we think of in popular culture, people who are conventionally rich or wealthy, when we think of Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk or Taylor Swift, they're all financially independent. Taylor Swift is not performing concerts because she needs the money. She's not touring because she needs to keep the lights on and put food in the fridge. She's doing so because she loves her community. She loves her career. And despite the fact that she's financially independent, she is still all in on being a musician. Elon Musk is not trying to terraform Mars and create a human colony on Mars because he needs to pay his like sewer bill. That's why I think that those two concepts really need to be separated.
I agree. I think the retirement, and I've gone on record talking about this. I even talked about it in my book, Financial Planning Made Personal, that I think this whole concept about retirement is somewhat antiquated. This whole idea that you go work for 30, 40, 50 years and then all of a sudden get to enjoy life. Why aren't we enjoying it along the way, right? And that kind of leads me into the next piece I want to talk to you about. I am a big fan of experience versus things. We talked a little bit about it, that you've traveled during that 27-month period. I don't know if all 45 countries or more than 45 countries that you've gone to were simply in that period. I'd have to think that it wasn't. It was over a bigger time frame. But I have to ask, what was your favorite place and why was that your favorite place?
So during the 27 months, I went to 17 countries. So it was 17 countries in 27 months. I get that question a lot. Well, where was my favorite? And I say, I have different favorites for different categories. So I've got favorite city to wander solo, favorite city for meeting local people, favorite beach, and then within the category favorite beach, favorite party beach, and then favorite secluded beach, right? Party beach versus quiet beach. So in all of these different categories, I've got different favorites.
I see a travel guide coming out soon, no?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I think some of the best information about travel is forum-based and community-based. I think in the early 2000s, before internet forums were as big as they are today, there was a much bigger role for travel guides, things like Lonely Planet and Fodors and Frommers and all of those. That was like the heyday of printed travel guides. Whereas today, you get so much amazing information from Reddit, from, you know, you can Yelp a city. You could just go on Yelp and be like, let's see the Yelp reviews of Miami. And you get such great information that's crowdsourced and community-based. I don't know if any one singular entity can beat that. So I really think a lot of good travel information is decentralized these days. Yeah.
And I think not too different than personal finance, because personal finance is personal, right? What's important or interesting to me from a personal finance perspective may be very different than from you and from everybody else, right? Because it is a very personal thing. I think travel is very similar, right? There are personal things that as a person traveling or as a couple, you may be looking to experience. For instance, I'm not a big museum goer, right? So if I go to a location and a book's written about all these locations for museums, that may not resonate with me. Whereas if I go to a forum that's specifically in line with certain things that I'm in line with, it makes it a little bit easier to narrow it down and be more personalized, just like we're talking about from a finance perspective. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, exactly. I think I used to teach workshops. I used to go lead these week-long workshops in Costa Rica for aspiring travel bloggers. I did that for a number of years. And the advice that I would always give them, there's nothing that you can say that Lonely Planet hasn't already said, right? If people want information, they'll get information from these fact-checked, vetted official sources. And if people want crowdsourced information, they can go to forums for that. So what is the role for an individual creator? Well, the role that an individual creator can play, the niche that they can occupy, is one of two things. Either they can have some highly specific Venn diagram intersection of travel in North America with dogs, right? So they can really focus on, all right, if you want to road trip around North America with your dogs, here are the dog-friendly hotels, here's the dog-friendly parks, mm-hmm. Here's everything that you need to know about dog-friendly travel, right? I think there's a good place for that. Travel with diabetes, those types of Venn diagram intersections. I think there's a great place for that. The other opportunity, and this requires a much higher threshold of skill or talent to be able to pull off successfully, is to be entertaining in some way. And most often that means that you're funny, right? So if you can, the Everywhereist does this really well, Geraldine DeRuyter. If you can write about travel in a way that is just hilarious, then people aren't, travel is almost a byproduct. Like, people are reading you first and foremost for your humor writing. And the fact that there happens to be a lot of travel is secondary, and it adds some color and it adds some context. But first and foremost, people are reading you because you're such a good comedy writer.
Yeah, great points. Great points. Well, listen, Paul, it's been a pleasure having you on. And I told you, we're all about joy here on the Mintland Money Mindset. So we ask each of our guests the same final question. And that is, what did you do today that brought you joy and put you in the right mindset for success?
Ooh, you know, it was a workout class that I went to this morning. I don't know if you're familiar with Solid Core, but I just started going about 3 weeks ago. Oh my goodness. It is.
It sounds painful to my core.
Yes, it is. It is. But you know, the first time that I went, I was like, I need to go get in shape to be able to come back to this class.
Get in shape to get in shape.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So the first time I went, I'm embarrassed to say, I was so intimidated by the class that I didn't go back for about 4 or 5 months. I was like, I'm not in shape enough to take this class. And then I went a few more times, and then I realized, you know what? The only way that I'm ever going to be in shape enough to take this class is by taking this class. So I'm going to go 5 days a week, and I'm going to be the worst student in class, but I'm going to also be the most persistent.
Well, soon enough, you won't be the worst anymore, right? If you put in that kind of effort and time, for sure, you're not going to be the worst for very long.
Most improved. Yeah.
I'm telling you, I'm sore just thinking about it, but I'm glad it brought you joy today. So thank you. Thank you for sharing that. So listen, we're going to have all of your information in the show notes, Paula, but if people want to learn more about the Afford Anything podcast or your entire brand or about you, what's the easiest and the best place for them to do that?
So I would say go to any major podcast player, go to Spotify, go to Apple Podcasts, and look up the Afford Anything podcast. We're on YouTube, youtube.com/affordanything. And I would say, most importantly, sign up for the newsletter. So if you go to affordanything.com, we've got a great newsletter there. Or you can go to affordanything.com/show notes. You'll get not just the newsletter, but also the show notes from all of our podcast episodes. So that's where I would encourage you to go to check out all of the amazing information that we offer.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing. And I encourage everybody to go check out Paula and the affordanything.com podcast, all of her deliverables. They're very educational, enlightening, and there's a lot of great information in there. I thank you for your time today, Paula, and enjoy the day.
Great. Thank you.
I want to thank Paula Pant for being a guest on the Mintland Money Mindset. Paula followed her passion, and in return, she has created quite the following. The Mintland Money Mindset aspires to being as highly regarded as Paula and the Afford Anything podcast. Understanding what you want out of life and the relationship you have with money is a key to being successful toward your goals. This includes enjoying today while also planning for your future. Paula Pant and Afford Anything can be found across most social media platforms. All the contact information needed to find them can be found in the show notes. Thank you for joining us this week on the Mintland Money Mindset. Make sure you visit our website at MintlandMoneyMindset.com and smash the subscribe button so you don't miss a show. We encourage you to help others find our valuable content, and please don't keep us a secret. You can also schedule an Is There a Fit call right from our website or by using the link that you'll find in the description section of your podcast player or app. And be sure to join us for our next episode to learn more about getting your mind right when it comes to all things money.
The opinions voiced in the Midland Money Mindset Show with Lauren Sprung are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. All indices are unmanaged and may not be invested into directly. Investing involves risk, including possible loss of principal. No strategy ensures success or protects against loss. To determine what may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, financial or tax advisor prior to investing. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Guests on the Midland Money Mindset Show are not affiliated with CWM LLC.